Welcome to the Capital News. I am your host, Alex Caritis. Today's October 9th, 2019. Thank you so much for joining me. The main focus of today's podcast is going to be centered around U.S.-China trade talks, or lack thereof. Although, depending on the headline you read, you don't know. Is there a deal, a partial deal? Is China walking away from the table? Has the U.S. put on too many sanctions against Chinese corporations and individuals? Nobody knows. It is literally minute by minute, headline by headline, and I'm going to take the time to read a brief article to you guys here shortly. We're also going to discuss briefly the Fed's meeting minutes, which were released this afternoon. They are looking for excuses to expand their balance sheet just to find justification. They were going to do this regardless of whether or not they could find justification. Like we said yesterday, I was ranting all day yesterday on yesterday's podcast in regards to the Federal Reserve expanding their balance sheet once again, something that was supposed to be emergency, something that was supposed to be temporary in nature, is now basically going to be permanent. And we are not allowed to call it quantitative easing. This is just a natural progression of monetary policy. Of course, that's a load of BS, but that's what they're telling us. And when we get to the minutes, you're going to find that they want inflation to be even higher than 2%. So they just want to continue to steal even more of your purchasing power. But hey, they work for us. Then what I'm going to kick off this podcast with here is what we also talked about yesterday was President Trump ordering U.S. troops out of Syria. And then we said that's a good move. We're against endless wars. However, in this context, because we did have an alliance with the Kurds, that if we leave and the Turks go in, they could potentially massacre the Kurds. And I said that would not be a good scenario. It's not going to look good for the United States. Clearly, the loss of life and the casualties is not going to be good for the Kurds or other innocent people in Syria. But that was something that we have to be mindful of, because if the United States is going to be, you know, real willy-nilly with our alliances, that's not going to bode well for any type of future alliance that we have to form, because now there's going to be a question of, here's that word again, credibility coming from this White House. So that is something of serious nature. That is something that we discussed yesterday. That was our one reservation in regards to this. I mean, that is not in and of itself justification to stay there, but it is something to be mindful of. And I don't know the context or the content of the conversation between President Donald Trump and his counterpart, President Erdogan, over in Turkey, as to whether or not Donald Trump knew that Turkey was going to stage basically an attack or an invasion of Syria, because that's what they're doing. They are bombing northern Syria right now. Remains to be seen. So it's going to be interesting to see if that becomes under investigation as well in all of this impeachment inquiry fiasco. And for those of you who may be wondering, the reason why I don't talk about that on a daily basis is because there hasn't really been any new news out regarding the impeachment inquiry. That doesn't mean that that doesn't stop the mainstream media from discussing it on the news on a daily basis, continuing to push their narrative, depending on what network you are listening to. If you're listening to MSNBC or CNN, Donald Trump's guilty of sin. He's got to go. This is just another drop in the bucket. This is no surprise, an abuse of power. He's corrupt as the day is long. We got to get rid of him. Joe Biden can't be investigated because he's a political opponent, which is nonsense. Being a political opponent does not exempt you from investigation or allows you to commit a crime. Nobody is above the law. Joe Biden, Hunter Biden, Donald Trump, Donald Jr. makes no difference. So that argument, to me, falls on its face. Conversely, you listen to Fox News. This is the grandest and largest conspiracy or coup ever concocted, and it is being staged against Donald J. Trump. This is the deep state. This is the Democrats working in conjunction to overthrow this guy. Okay? You're going to believe what you want to believe. I talk about this here all the time. You're going to get siloed in. If you listen to MSNBC or CNN, that's your camp. If you listen to Fox News, that's your camp. That's what you agree with. That's what you want to hear. It's confirmation bias. We all fall guilty. You know, we all fall to it. There's no question about it, but you got to do your best job to get as much information as possible on this topic at hand. And that is why here at the Capital News, I took the time to simply read the documents that have been disclosed. Documents that have been released from the White House, documents that have been released from the Inspector General of the Intelligence Community in regards to the whistleblower's complaint, and in regards to the memo itself that was issued by the Inspector General of the Intelligence Community. And we said, here are the facts, here's what we know, and that's it. That's it. Given the transcript that was released, or the quasi-transcript that was released from the White House in regards to the call between President Trump and President Zelensky of the Ukraine, we said, look, from what this states to me, as far as my analysis and opinion is concerned, this in and of itself does not rise to an impeachable offense. However, given what the White House released in conjunction with what was released by the Inspector General, his memo, and the whistleblower's complaint, those things jived. Whatever information the whistleblower had was in agreement with what that was on that phone call between President Trump and President Zelensky. So there was some credibility to this whistleblower, regardless of whether he or she had and received this information secondhand. Now there are reports that are being circulated out there that there is a second whistleblower, and this individual has firsthand knowledge. Now, one of the arguments that is coming out from the White House is Donald Trump wants to question his accuser. Well, this is an investigation. This is not the trial. The investigation takes place in the House. The trial takes place in the Senate. We're not even there yet. The Democrats haven't even voted on this to make this a formal impeachment. Okay, the articles of impeachment have not been filed. This is an impeachment inquiry. Okay? So this argument from the White House is simply not valid, ladies and gentlemen. It is not valid. At trial, you get to face your accuser. In an investigation, you don't. The defendant does not have a hand in the investigation. The police are not going to give up the information to the suspect. Okay? Because then the suspect is going to know what they have to say and what they have to do. That's not how it works. That's what this is. But this is a political investigation. This is not a criminal investigation. But nevertheless, it still works in the same manner. What we have now is the White House, despite the fact that Donald Trump wanted to be as transparent as possible, release those transcripts before he, quote unquote, had to. Now they're backing off that. This is an unfair process. We don't like it. It's highly partisan. And now they are skirting and refusing to comply with congressional subpoenas. So this is something that will probably also be tacked on for further justification to impeach Donald J. Trump, because he is obstructing justice. He is skirting these subpoenas, which is basically something that Richard Nixon did back in the 1970s. So there's some precedent to this. So it's not going to be good, ladies and gentlemen. The president has to come forward with as much information as possible. Of course, if it's bad, then he's going to do what he's doing. He's going to duck and dodge. And, you know, to some degree, that's understandable. But this is a serious issue, as I've been saying here from the get-go with this. Impeachment is not to be taken lightly. Even Nancy Pelosi understands this. And she said it was a sad day for this country when she made the decision to move forward with an impeachment inquiry, despite the fact that she has been, to her credit, putting this off for a very long time, because, I mean, the Democrats have been rabid since November of 2016 to impeach this guy. So impeachment is a serious thing. There is not much precedent for it because it is so serious, because it is so divisive, because we are supposed to allow the electorate to make the decision as to whether or not a president stands in office or is removed in a subsequent election. So this is serious. And when you have the nation at its throat to begin with, this is just more gasoline on the fire. But that in and of itself is not justification to not move forward with an impeachment inquiry if there are legitimate concerns. And again, I do not think the transcript, the phone call between Trump and Zelensky, rises to an impeachable offense. However, if there are other serious questions that have been raised by the whistleblower that are in agreement with the transcript released by the Trump administration itself, then I do believe an impeachment inquiry is warranted. I also believe if the accusations or allegations are true, that you have to look into Joe Biden, then look into Joe Biden. But if this is just, you know, a smokescreen, well, then that's got to be found out, too. The truth has to be found, and justice has to be served, no matter who's involved. So that's that on the impeachment. Again, getting back quickly here to the Turkish attacks in northern Syria, Donald Trump was asked about this earlier in the afternoon, and he reiterated his strongman stance of, well, you know, I really hope President Erdogan uses some rationality here and treads carefully. And if this does turn into a massacre or something worse, I will once again decimate their economy. And then for some reason, I don't know who's telling him what, but he went off on a little bit of a tangent, which I guess is the norm. But he's saying that the Kurds did not help the United States in World War II and did not help us in Normandy. Now, that's a head scratcher to me. I mean, the Kurds are in the Middle East. They're not in France. They're not in Germany. We're in Syria. We're in the Middle East. We've made an alliance with the Kurds because of what we're doing. So I don't know where the president's pulling this out of, why he's bringing this up, that the Kurds didn't help us in World War II. I guess it's justification for us to leave and allow them to be massacred. I mean, that's just beyond the pale. I don't understand that at all. Well, they didn't help us 70 years ago, so if they get massacred, that's their fault. That just doesn't jive with me, despite the fact that I am in agreement that we got to end these endless wars. But if somebody gets massacred as a result of it, and somebody who has done the bulk of the fighting, now we gave them, you know, the munitions, we gave them the training, we gave them the intelligence, and a whole host of other things, I'm sure, you know, they risked life and limb, and thousands of the Kurds died fighting our cause. And if we leave them to slaughter, that is going to be highly problematic. So we'll see how that unfolds. I'll keep you posted. To some of the market news before we get into these trade propaganda headlines. The S&P gained 26 points, an increase of 0.9%. The Dow gained 182, an increase of 0.7%. The NASDAQ gained 80 points, an increase of 1% for the day. And the Russell 2000, the small cap index, gained back 7 points, an increase of 0.5%. The Dow Jones Transports gained 1.2%, and the New York Stock Exchange also rose 0.8%. Oil, relatively unchanged from yesterday's podcast. Same rings true with gold and silver. A lot of fluctuations in the markets today, although mainly in the green for the major indexes based off of trade optimism. There's going to be some soybeans. U.S. 10-year Treasury gained and is now yielding 1.59%. So there was some selling of the U.S. 10-year Treasury because, well, it's a risk-on event when trade talks are going well, or are they? And then we have the VIX, the Volatility Index, giving back 8% and is now trading at $18.64. Just to be consistent with the podcast, as of late, FedEx increased 0.6% for the day. But U.S. Steel, get this, gave back 8.5% today, 8.5% lost on U.S. Steel, hitting a three-year low at $10 a share. This is on the back of further news coming out from U.S. Steel saying that they have to continue to cut costs. No surprise to us here at the Capital News. We said this is going to be happening, not just with U.S. Steel, but with other big corporations and small corporations as well, because we're at the peak, people. This is what happens. You got wages have gone up. You have unemployment, very, very low levels, multi-decade lows. That's a lagging indicator. When you start to have these costs creeping up, profit margins get squeezed. When profit margins get squeezed, the company has to make a decision. What do? We cut costs or we increase our prices onto our customers? Well, you know, when you're at the end of a cycle, it's not very good to start increasing cost or increasing, prices to your consumers. So you start cutting costs. What do? You lay people off. You shut down production. You do a whole host of things to maintain profit margins. This is business. This is how this works. So U.S. Steel is one of many who are cutting costs. That's going to mean jobs. We had those conversations many times here before. And also the CFO is stepping down as well, although I do believe he will be staying for a short-term basis to sort of onboard the incoming CFO. So there's a lot of changes going on. This is by no means winning this trade war when it comes to U.S. Steel. And this is not just true of U.S. Steel. There are other steel companies as well, but obviously U.S. Steel, you know, pretty reputable, pretty well known. That's why we talk about U.S. Steel. But I might have to do a podcast just on the steel industry as well, just to highlight where we were pre-trade war as to where we are today, and just to see if we actually are winning. Okay, so real quickly, let's get to the Fed meetings minutes. Again, as I stated at the top of this podcast, the Federal Reserve is looking for justification to allow inflation to run higher than 2%. Now, we talked about this yesterday. We talked about this on previous podcasts, that this is what they want. You have to understand what inflation is. It is theft of your purchasing power. It is theft of your purchasing power. And for some reason, they think 2% is the magical number. But now, because inflation has officially been running under 2% for quite a while, which is their target, they now say, well, we can be symmetrical about 2%. So that just means if we've been at 1.8%, we can now go above 2% to 2.2%. We're 2/10 below, now we can be 2/10 above. This is the nonsense. They make this up. This is not any type of economic theory anywhere, ladies and gentlemen. This is in la-la land, okay? If their charter is full employment and stable prices, you explain to me how 2%, 2.2%, 2.5% is more stable than zero. You explain that to me. How 2.5%, 2.2%, 2% is more stable than one? It's not. It's not. So don't even try to BS me. But this is what the Federal Reserve does to us every single day. Every single day. They want to continue to steal your purchasing power. That's what they're in the business of doing. And they think 2% is a magical number because it's a slow burn. It's a slow creep. It's all it is. I've given the analogy before. It's like throwing a frog into a boiling pot of water. The adrenaline, the shock, he's going to jump right out. But if you put him into a lukewarm pot of water and you turn the heat up, before you know it, the frog's cooked. And that's exactly what the Federal Reserve is doing to us. That's what other central banks are doing to their people all over the world. So it really disgusts me when I hear Jay Powell come out, and he stated this many, many times over, as have previous Federal Reserve chairmen and other members of the Fed and other central bankers, when they come out and they say, we work for the American people, or we work for the people of Europe, or we work for the people of Japan. That's a bunch of baloney, period. They don't work for the people. They work for people who might be in those countries, but you're talking the 1%, the top 10%. All you have to do, ladies and gentlemen, is look at the facts, look at the income inequality that exists. I do not demonize wealth here. I want everybody to be successful and to be as wealthy as they want to be. Of course, do it legally, but the way that the Federal Reserve does it, it's a fraud. It's a fraud. They literally print money or create it on a digital screen, and then it goes to all of their buddies on Wall Street and to major corporations. They get the money first. Then they go out and they buy actual real assets with that money because they know most of that cash is nothing but funny money. But guess what? The assets are real. Real estate's real. It can generate income. Mines, plants, property, those are real. Those can generate cash flow, which allow them to buy more assets, plants and equipment. Those are real things. The funny money just gives, it's just monopoly money. That's all it is. You have to understand this. This is why I go off on tangents. This is why I talk about, you know, a $1 trillion deficit. Why people who want to say, well, Donald Trump, he cut taxes. Yeah, it was a good thing. No, it wasn't, because he didn't cut spending. That means your deficits go up. That means it needs to be funded. That means you have more debt. How's it going to be financed? With the Federal Reserve. What's the Fed going to do? They're not just giving it to you for free. They're charging you interest. So thanks a lot. You put more money in my pocket through tax cuts just to take it out of my other pocket with inflation. You got to wake up and you got to understand this. There is no free lunch. You want to drain the swamp, you got to starve it. And the Fed abolished the federal income tax. So the Federal Reserve is on its, they're on their own tangent now. They're looking for their justification to continue to expand their balance sheet. They're doing it anyway. And they're going to continue to do it, despite the fact that there was some dissent in the meeting last month, which we talked about. It was a vote of 7-3, 7 members of the Federal Reserve voting board wanted to cut interest rates by 25 basis points, which is what happened. 3 members did not, One wanted to cut it by 50 basis points, and the two others said, no, everything's fine the way it is. We'll just continue to be data dependent, and we'll see. We're flexible to changing our mind, but if we continue to cut, this could actually cause bigger problems down the road. Well, no, you know what, Sherlock. Of course it's going to cause bigger problems down the road. That's exactly what this is. It's pushing people further and further out onto the risk curve. It's allowing zombie companies to remain alive when they should go out of business or into bankruptcy. And if they come out through a restructuring, more power to them. But if they go away, shame on them. Allow the next entrepreneur to saddle up and do a better job. That's how it's supposed to work. The best regulation is failure. That's the free market. So the Federal Reserve wants to continue to inflate and reflate and reflate and inflate. So don't be surprised. They're going to cut rates again. Quantitative easing, which they even admit here, is going to, well, they're not calling it quantitative easing, but their expansion is going to be aggressive. That's aggressive. So if you want to read those minutes, you can check those out on the Federal Reserve website, federalreserve.gov, if you want to check that out. Now, to some of the U.S.-China trade propaganda, with a lot of the headlines that have been coming out today, the markets rallied today pretty much on the hopes that there is going to be some sort of deal. Now, it's not going to be a complete deal, at least that's not what we've been told, but they're hoping that there can be a partial deal. Now, up until right before, I think about 20 minutes before the markets closed here in the U.S., there was a story that came out that pretty much said that the talks are stalling and now things aren't going to be great. So at one point, just about 20 minutes before market close, I believe the NASDAQ was up about 1.5%. So pretty much getting back what it lost yesterday, almost, but not quite. But then that story broke from Reuters that the talks were stalling, and it went all the way back, and it just simply gained 1% for the day. That's the NASDAQ. But that was simply pretty much the case across the other broader indexes as well. So here is an article from Zero Hedge. They actually have a graph. This was posted later this evening in regards to the futures market with the Dow. But it says here, Dow futures have swung up and down 300 plus points, get this, four separate times on four different headlines. The first headline, U.S.-China make no progress in deputy-level trade talks. That's according to the South China Morning Post. So the futures declined 300 points almost immediately. Then you get another headline that comes out. China's Li to stay in Washington through Friday for meetings. And that's according to CNBC. And the markets rallied, pretty much getting back all of that 300-point loss. Then another headline comes out. Chinese trade sources tell Fox Business that the Chinese trade team will leave one day after talks on Thursday. And then the markets went right back down a couple hundred points. And then lastly, at least at the time of this podcast, you had one more that came out and it said U.S. weighing currency pact with China as part of a partial deal. And then the markets were pretty much right back where they started several hours earlier. Who do you trust? Nobody. That's who you trust. You trust nobody. You trust your gut. You trust your instinct. You stick with the Capital News because we've been telling you this for, well, I mean, I've only been doing this podcast since February of this year. But if you knew me earlier, it was same thing. I remain very consistent that this has just been a joke since the very, very beginning. This is just something that we're going to be jerked around and continuing. And we told you. And I say this here all the time when it comes to war, whether it's a trade war or a kinetic hot war, the first casualty is always the truth. So we don't know. And one of the things that I have been warning here for quite a while is this has been one-sided until recently. The U.S. has been the one coming out and saying everything's fine, there's going to be a deal, yada, yada, yada. The market manipulation from the president, which is an abuse of power, you want to impeach him, you want to do something, look into that. Sending Larry Kudlow out there, Peter Navarro, who needs to be fired, Steven Mnuchin, Lighthizer, the trade representative, you know, a whole host of people, Secretary of Commerce, Wilbur Ross, any one of them. The markets are selling off. Go out there, say everything's fine with China. Of course, it never turns out to be, but that's fine. And we said, you know what? One day, China's going to speak up. And then who are the markets going to believe? Well, right now, they don't know who to believe. Because I just read you four headlines. A couple of them were positive, a couple of them were negative. Some of them are coming from the U.S. Some of them are coming from China. Who to believe? Who to believe? I don't believe any of them. I'll see it when I see it. Continuing here with this Zero Hedge article. And to think how blissfully stocks surged today on optimism that China was willing to pursue a partial deal. Moments after U.S. equity futures reopened for trading, they plunged after the South China Morning Post reported that deputy-level trade talks between the U.S. and China aimed at laying the groundwork for high-level negotiations later this week, quote, failed to yield any progress on critical issues, according to a couple of sources. According to the report, the deputy-level negotiators, led on the Chinese side by Vice Premier for Finance Lao Min, spent the time focusing on only two areas. Agricultural purchases, soybeans, of course, and intellectual property protection. This apparently was not enough. As other news wires reported earlier, during the discussions on Monday and Tuesday in Washington, the Chinese refused to talk about forced technology transfers, one source said, which is a core U.S. grievance regarding China's economic policies. Speaking on condition of anonymity, the person said that talks had also skirted the issue of state subsidies, which the Trump administration says gives Chinese companies an unfair advantage over international competitors. I wonder if the president thinks that the subsidies that the U.S. gives U.S. companies gives our companies a competitive advantage to foreign companies, or even to small and mid-cap companies here in this country. I would like to hear his thoughts on that. Continuing, they have made no progress, said another source familiar with the talks, adding that the Chinese side had not made headway in persuading U.S. negotiators to consider a freeze on tariff increases, a main priority for Beijing. What we know so far, folks, this is just an aside from the article, that it appears that Beijing is trying to sort of appease Donald Trump and saying, well, look, we'll buy more soybeans. Of course, buying one bushel would be more than what they've been buying. So we'll buy more soybeans, but you have to not increase any tariffs. You know, that goodwill that you gave us at the beginning of the year so we could celebrate our 70th anniversary. That was good. That was very nice. And I know you were going to hold off on those tariffs until potentially next week if everything goes well with these talks. Let's hope that that happens. So that's sort of what they're coming in here. They don't want more tariffs on Chinese goods. So we'll have to wait and see what happens tomorrow and Friday if there are even negotiations, because you never know what headline to trust. Continuing, and confirming that the week's entire negotiation was a fiasco from the start, the South China Morning Post reports that the Chinese delegation is planning to leave Washington on Thursday, one day early, and after just one day of principal-level talks. Beijing's negotiating team, headed by Vice Premier Li He, had previously planned to leave Washington late on Friday, allowing for up to two full days of talks. Li arrived in the U.S. Capitol on Tuesday afternoon amid one of the tensest weeks for bilateral relations since the trade war began in July of 2018. And then the article goes on to continue, and it even notes the NBA fiasco between the Houston Rockets general manager and, you know, the shout-out to or the support for Hong Kong protesters and the right to free speech and the right to protest and all that stuff. We told you yesterday. I mean, it was tongue-in-cheek, but, I mean, it was serious. It's just another sticking point because there's other issues that remain out there, like the article notes. To be sure, Wednesday's announcement that the U.S. would block visas of various Chinese officials did not help. And that just goes on to pretend to deal with some internal issues that are taking place in China. And again, the U.S. is trying to throw our weight around to affect change in those regards as well. So that's something that I'm sure the Chinese don't like. So these are just many, many sticking points. But, you know, it's one headline after the other. It drives me insane because I don't like it. I don't think the government should be virtually allowing this to happen. These are trade negotiations. We didn't have all these shenanigans with the USMCA, which is NAFTA 2.0. We didn't have these shenanigans with trade talks between the U.S. and Japan. We didn't have these shenanigans with the trade talks between the United States and South Korea. So why do we have them with China? I mean, we know the answer because it's market manipulation. But, you know, you get what I'm saying? These are negotiations. Do them in private. There's good news. Let it out. Let it be known. If there's bad news, let it out. Let it be known. You want to continue to keep talking? Continue to keep talking. But don't come out here and say everything's fine when it isn't. Just don't do it. It's just not good policy. You don't know who to trust. You're supposed to want to put trust in your government officials. I mean, as hard as that is to believe, that's, you know, we're trying to hope here. We're trying to be optimistic. You're trying to believe what comes out of the Oval Office. But it's becoming more and more difficult on a daily basis, unfortunately. And so we're just going to have to hang tight, see what happens tomorrow, see what happens Friday, if they even have negotiations on Friday. But don't be surprised if volatility goes to the moon one way or the other on this, because there's only two things that are supporting this market at this time. Trade optimism and hope for the Federal Reserve to come to the rescue with lower interest rates and a massive expansion of their balance sheet. Will they get 2 for 2 or will they go 0 for 2? Time will tell. Stay diversified, stay vigilant, and stay with the Capital News. Please like, share, subscribe, get the word out, and leave your comments. We do love hearing from you. Just like last week, I will most likely not be doing a podcast for the next 2 days. So if I don't, enjoy your weekend, and I do hope to have a podcast on Sunday evening for the week ahead segment. So be on the lookout for that if you don't hear from me on Thursday or Friday. But pay attention, folks. This is big stuff. It's coming down to the wire. Decisions have to be made. This is the Capital News. I am Alex Kritis. Godspeed.